Welcome back to Podcast Recover, everyone. We are your hosts, David O.
And Eric V.
Today we are joined again by our very special, lovely guest, Jexy. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good.
I'm doing well.
Yeah.
And, I'm gonna skip all the prerequisite questions and just let you tell everyone what we're gonna be discussing today, Jexy.
So today we are gonna be discussing tradition four, which for those
which
of
is.
You which which is each group ought to be fully autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or NA as a whole.
Perfect. Nice. All right. Give us your experience, strength, and hope with this, and then we'll roundtable it.
Fantastic. So, you know, a lot of times people think like traditions are boring, but for me, what I've noticed is the longer that I'm in NA, the more the traditions really seem to not just matter, but like come up. Mm. So, you know, as most people know, most of us are in some type of quarantine situation. A couple weeks before we were like actually quarantined, my home group, you know, when things were just starting to get bad in New Jersey, where they were talking about potentially, you know, limiting exposure, you know, that people had or starting to limit, where they started to make suggestions that like maybe groups shouldn't meet. And one of the experienced home group members that I had said, you know, made the suggestion to the group that we may want to not meet in person anymore. Even though we were still technically allowed, the church we were meeting at said it would still be okay. But, you know, the home group member that had brought this up is somebody that we all trust and we value his opinion. And, you know, he gave us his reasoning why he thought it would be a good idea. And I said, you know what? The good news about doing it early is that we can set up an online meeting. We can spend this time letting people know. So we had our very last meeting, and I actually brought my computer and I showed everybody how to access the meeting on Discord, was the program we were going to use.
Cool.
And I showed people how they can access it. And prior to that, I had created a whole Discord server for my area. I talked to our area chair, our area vice chair, and I told them I was going to set up this server. Now, for those of you who don't know, Discord is just it's like a chat forum. It's usually for gamers, but the way we have it set up is we can have like multiple meetings take place in there, plus like just general fellowship. It kind of functions as like a 24 club is the best way to describe it. So we closed our meeting down. And I had talked to the church, and I remember the woman at the church actually said to our group that she was grateful that we had made that decision because the church obviously didn't want to have to close us down, right? And so we kind of took them out of a bad spot, right? Like, we had made the decision ourselves. They were very pleased with us for making that decision. And we had gotten our entire home group and group set up online. So we were the first group in our area to do that. Well, I had gotten a lot of hate. People online at the time, there was a couple of old timers, one in particular, but who were going nuts saying that I was violating our traditions, that I didn't care about the newcomer, that I was harming NA, and they used tradition four as a way to try and say I was causing harm. They said I was shutting the doors and that what my group was doing was impacting other groups in NA as a whole, and how dare I, and that creating this server, I was actually told I was effing up NA as a whole. And I was hurt, right? Because here I am trying to do the best thing for my group and my area. And then, you know, obviously as things went, more and more groups had to close their doors. Then the churches made groups close their doors, right? And so luckily, we had kind of been, our area had kind of been ahead of the curve, we had some things in place. So some of our groups are meeting on this Discord server, other groups are using Zoom. But what then I saw what happened is it was happening in the other way, right? Where we were being told that groups should not be meeting, right? By the state, by the CDC, by whatever. And I was seeing these same people who were saying that us shutting down meetings was affecting NA as a whole, going in and they were meeting places and having groups, you know, whether they were doing it outside or at parks or whatever. And to me, I was saying to people, in my opinion, that was affecting NA as a whole. I said, because what happens if one of these people gets sick? Because if you're the type of person who says, I'm going to a meeting regardless, no matter how I'm feeling, no matter how it makes other people feel, you're also going to go if you're sick, right? Yeah. Oh, I have a little cold. Yep. Oh, I have whatever, but I need a meeting, right? And I said, what is it going to look like when they track down an outbreak and it comes from an NA meeting when people shouldn't have been meeting? I said, to me, that is what's going to affect NA as a whole, because, you know, look, and people are like, well, that's not real. That's not how things work. And I was like, yes, it is, because I can name birthday parties in Connecticut where an outbreak happened, a church in this place, a synagogue over here. That's exactly what they do. They track it down. And I said, can you imagine the harm that would be caused to our organization if we're being told that outbreaks are happening because NA groups are still meeting in person, even though they're being asked not to? And so then it caused a lot of controversy in my area because people had such varying opinions on what this tradition meant. And luckily now, like, people are kind of on the same page because, look, the reality of it is New Jersey actually will you'll actually get charges pressed if you meet in groups, right? Like, it's a misdemeanor. They will there is punishment here. Like, some states have made the same rules, but they haven't said what punishment is.
Same New Jersey. Here.
Yeah, New Jersey, they're like, no, there's punishment. This is what it is. So everybody's kind of gotten on board now. But, you know, it's been really harmful. The other thing that was going on that a lot of people didn't know is, you know, you've heard all the Zoom bombing, you know, where people have been, trolls have been going into people's Zoom meetings. Have you guys heard about that?
No.
Okay. So they fixed it today. All Zoom meetings now have passwords. You have to know a password to be able to get into them. But one of the things that I feared was happening with that platform is when you have those kinds of trolls, what could be happening is those meetings could be recorded. Because if they're coming in to cause harm, they can record, and they probably are, because what's the fun of causing harm, causing a ruckus to the meeting if you can't show your friends that you did it?
Yeah.
And I said, you know, we need to, like, again, like, that kind of stuff can affect NA as a whole. But again, each group gets to make their own choices. So I think that Tradition 4 has really been something that maybe didn't seem to matter as much. And, like, you couldn't really see in day-to-day how it applied, right? Until this whole thing came in, because some groups have very strong opinions. You know, there's things about Seventh Tradition money. Do you collect money as a group? Do you not? Do you allow somebody to send you money over the internet? How do you do it, right? And each group gets to be
Eric
autonomy.
Eric actually brought this up in our home group a while ago.
Like 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago for the Seventh Tradition. Because Eric doesn't usually carry cash, and he wanted a way to digitally wire the home group money. And it caused a really big ruckus. And honestly, now with people being at home, it would be very convenient if people could just PayPal or whatever.
Venmo would be the easiest way.
Venmo your home group money. So that's interesting you brought that up.
Yeah, well, because what we did right now, at least in the Discord server and, you know, in my home group, I'll speak to the ones I know, World sent out emails saying that they are, you know, in dire need of funding because they get most of their money through literature sales, which obviously aren't happening now. And so they have been asking for direct donations. And so because my group is not collecting Seventh Tradition right now, we have been telling people, look, you can do whatever you want, obviously, but World is asking for donations. So if you do want to donate, this is where you can donate. And I talked to my area actually today about it. And I said, you know, right now, like, our area doesn't really need it, but we don't know how long things are going to last or whether there is going to be a need. And I said, you know, if we set up a Venmo, and I said, if we set up a Venmo, it should be our treasurer that is the one that is responsible for it, because we already all voted that we trust that person with our finances. right? So if we're trusting that person with our finances, then we should continue to trust that person with our finances. And instead of having, right now, instead of having individual groups have to manage, manage internet money, because it's fine if you know the people who are sending you money, right? It gets a little sticky if you start having people who you don't know. And so by having it be to the treasurer of area, it kind of, there's like a protection there, right? But again, each group's autonomous. So some groups are choosing, you know, to collect their own money and be able to use it for their own things. We've had, the other thing that this has made a difference in our area in regards to like the Zoom thing, right, is our area had agreed to purchase a Zoom account. Our region had one that some groups were using. But when most of the groups in our area decided to use it, we had to pay for it, because you have to pay for like the plan that allows you to have so many people at a meeting or whatever. So a couple of our groups wanted to pay for the next higher tier, because right now we can have up to 100 people in a meeting, and they wanted to be able to have up to 300 people in a meeting. And so you'd have to pay, like, it's a significant amount more. And but there's only two groups that are hitting that limit out of like the 17 groups in our area. And so they want that. And technically, you know, if each group is autonomous, they should be able to make that happen. Whereas other groups are saying, no, that affects our group, because if we get the account that allows over 100 people, our group doesn't want to manage more than 100 people online at a time. It's too disruptive. It's too hard to get people to share. We don't want it. Well, if it's voted in that this group can have the kind of meeting they want to, and then we upgrade the area account, it now takes away the ability for these other groups who don't want that amount to put a limit on it. Mm-hmm. And so it's just one more way in which group autonomy, is questioned, because again, we're seeing more and more how each group's actions are affecting other groups and NA as a whole. You know, I think this has been the first time in a long time where we're seeing on a global scale. And I know I'm bringing up a lot of the negative and a lot of the problems, right? Like, let me also bring up some of the positives, right? Group autonomy has also allowed us to make decisions in a way that's positively affecting. For example, as I said, my home group had chosen to use the platform Discord, which we are not having the same problems with trolls. We are not having some of those same issues. Plus, we have 7 or 8 meetings all in the same place. So once you can log onto this one platform, you can find multiple meetings. You know, it's a little bit easier to navigate. But seeing how originally it was supposed to be just a couple groups, but as it spread and more people wanted to get involved, you know, our groups, you know, we were able to kind of come together with other groups and say, hey, like, no, this is bigger than just one group. This is bigger than just one area. And, you know, work together with other areas and say, like, hey, like, we have trusted servants across the board from multiple areas who've come together to build this thing. And it's been really great. You know, it's working. You know, all these different meetings from different areas happening in one place are working, because each group is saying, you know what, we're going to help serve. We're going to vote people in that are going to help do service work. We have trusted servants. We have greeters, you know, and it's just been amazing to see how all that comes together. You know, so there's been a lot of unity. I mean, I think things are much better now. A couple weeks ago, if we would have talked, I don't know that I would have sounded so positive. You know, it was very hard to deal with the negativity and stuff of people telling me that I was messing up NA by encouraging online meetings.
That's crazy.
Listen, here, Maryland NA has been going perfectly fine, with, like, despite their feelings of you ruining it.
Well, thank you. See, it makes me feel better.
So, and any of those doubters or naysayers out there who are listening, Jexy did not ruin anything. she might have ruined your little pity party or your little day and got your tiny hurt baby feelings hurt, but no, you didn't ruin anything.
No, I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, luckily I did get a lot of love from people, you know, because I reached out and I was like, look, I'm trying to do something good for our area, but I can't shoulder the burden of all of this hate. You know, like, I know most of us know that if we're going to keep meeting, maybe today we can meet in person, but like, let's be real. We're going to come to a time within the next week or two that we're not going to be able to. So like, let's be proactive so that we're not leaving newcomers in the dust. Because right now, because our area was proactive, we were able to reach out to all the rehab centers who had stopped allowing their people to come to the meetings anyway for their own safety.
Yeah.
And we reached out to them, and we told them how to get into all the different meetings and how, you know, they could go on one computer and do it together. And so all these newcomers, all the rehabs, you know, the places where we had meetings knew how to tell people how to get to them because we had it all set up ahead of time. If we would have waited until everything was shut down, it would have been much harder to have those communications.
Yes. And like they've even shown that like throughout this crisis over about the last month, that there's been a really high spike in relapse and just use in general. Because like a lot of the rehabs, at least here in Maryland, have stopped accepting people. So whoever's in is in, but they're not bringing more people in. Because it's a small community. It's like outpatient is one thing. They're still accepting outpatient patients, but inpatient they've stopped admitting a lot of people because it's a health risk not only for the staff but for the patients they already have. Because you don't know who you're bringing in off the street, where they've been, all this.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's a health risk and it's a liability insurance wise. So yeah, they've had to stop bringing people in.
I was gonna say when you said that the relapse rate is high. It's funny. I actually have a video that I'm gonna be putting up tomorrow that I recorded this week that literally talked about the fact that I think that it's not just normally like the newcomers are the ones that are at the highest risk, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think this has put people with significant clean time in the high risk category, just because for me, and I've talked to a lot of other addicts, is that this feels like active addiction, right? Like we're isolated, we're not going out, we're not seeing people in person, we're, you know, sitting in our rooms playing video games, playing on the computer, whatever. And it has that trigger effect of active addiction, and it's so easy to just be alone in your head. And you know, on the positive side though, is that for me, it's made me, you know, I think I don't want to say I was complacent because like I go to meetings regularly, you know, like I do all the stuff I'm supposed to do, right? But I felt like I was just going through the motions. And I think that a situation like this has caused me to reevaluate what those motions are and say like, look, if I want to continue in my recovery, like I have to be proactive. I'm going to have to do something more than just go to the same meeting every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know. It's scary.
But I really think this is a very trying situation for everybody's recovery.
For sure.
And honestly, I think the people that are staying clean, it really speaks to the volume of work and dedication that they've actually done on themselves. Because like a lot of people are like, oh, the no matter what club, blah, 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 this and that. And is it really the no matter what club? Because now you don't have a normal life, period. You do not have a normal life. You don't have a normal job. You don't have normal association with all your people, all your network, everything. So are you willing to pick up the phone, get on the Zoom or the Discord? Are you willing to reach out and seek that recovery just like you did have your normal life 8 weeks ago? Like, how has your foundation really like kicked in to continue your recovery?
So
it speaks volumes to the people.
I think that NA has really set us up to be the most prepared, right? Like, I think that if you really look at it, recovering addicts are the most prepared to deal with this kind of stuff. Although we hate change, although we hate when things are different and we don't know what's happening and stuff, we may not like it. But we already have steps that teach us what to do, right? Like when we're in a crazy situation that we can't control, like we're taught, like we admit, like we're powerless. And when we try to, you know, take control of something, like it makes our lives unmanageable. Like we learn, like we have to have faith that things are going to be okay. We have to turn it over, right? Like we have to look at our own role in things. So we shouldn't be fighting with our families and stuff. We should be able to recognize our part. And, you know, like, I feel like, look, not to say everybody's perfect, but the program we work is there for us to get through this.
Yes. And if you put a microscope on the fourth step and every individual addict, like right now on Podcast Recovery, we have three autonomous addicts. Eric, David, and Jexy. All three of us are going about different principles and different actions in our recovery and in our lives to make the best of this situation and stay clean.
Absolutely.
And they're not going to be the same.
All right.
Eric, I want to read a couple things straight out of the book and then get to questions if that's okay.
Go ahead, David.
Okay, they're short. Okay, so it says in the It Works How and Why, The fourth tradition guides us away from self-centeredness by giving us the freedom to act responsibly as groups. And I thought, Jexy, you touched on that absolutely. Your home group was acting autonomously, but responsibly for the freedom of recovery and Narcotics Anonymous as a group to promote social safety. So, like,
yeah,
that aligns perfectly. And then, like what you were talking about with some of the old timers giving you trouble. This is from the book. Again, open-mindedness is essential if we are to use autonomy to help NA grow. And that's simple. Like, these people aren't being open-minded about using technology to bridge a gap in recovery that needs to be bridged right now. Like, there is a physical barrier between recovering addicts, and technology, when used safely and responsibly, is a great way to bridge that gap and maintain NA's message across the board. And then the last thing I'm going to read, healthy, vital groups are essential to the growth of Narcotics Anonymous. Groups provide a place where we can offer our most basic service. One addict reaching out to another with a message of recovery. Without our autonomous groups, we would be unable to fulfill our primary purpose. So with those three things read and said, I think the fourth tradition is very key right now in people doing what needs to be done in a responsible manner and safe manner socially and technologically to make sure we all still have a place to go and recover.
Of course.
All right, Eric, what you got?
So I'm going to, before I even get to questions, it disappoints me, the situation that you described with the old timers in your area. I mean, it's sometimes, it fucking amazes me how people are incapable of, because you can really, I've sat in, you know, in group conscience and argued about, you know, like we talked about before with like the Venmo, because I mean when you talk about when you talk about Venmo, it's like, then are we endorsing Venmo? And I'm like, are we endorsing fucking cash? Like, what is wrong with you? Like, you know, I mean,
are we endorsing the Federal Reserve?
You know, what coffee are we getting? Like, you know, like these little things that people always forget about, which are just like, well, that's the way we've always done it. And it's like, well, are we endorsing Folgers or are we endorsing Starbucks? Because, I mean, really, that is what you're doing. Yeah. Is are you the meeting with the good coffee or are you the meeting with the bad coffee?
Right.
And we were the meeting with the good coffee, for the record.
And I think, because you can kind of fall into that trap of, you know, thinking that, oh man, well, you're endorsing like Zoom or you're endorsing Discord. And I think the problem with that is that you then become like, you're kind of losing the fucking point of what, like, the primary purpose is, which is to, you know, help this still sick and suffering addict. And like you were saying, Jexy, addicts in general, because, you know, for me, this is just another Sunday, to be real. I mean, yes, there's a crazy thing going on outside, but I'm very comfortable and fine sitting in my room for probably a while. I'm good.
Me too.
Yeah, but most people are not
Aaron
good with that.
Aaron will be fine until December.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm honestly good. Like, I don't need to see people, but I know a lot of people do. And, you know, in order to meet the needs, and, you know, we are autonomous, so in order to meet the needs of people who need recovery, you have to change and evolve. You can't meet. Because then, I mean, what's more important? Mm-hmm. Like, and I know what people will say is they'll argue and say that, you know, because, you know, well, it's all for the newcomer. And it's like, well, you know, the newcomer's finding this fucking church and finding the room in the basement to go to. I'm sure they can find the meeting online too.
Right.
I mean, there's no reason they can't find that. If they can find, like, that church that's, like, you know, behind this building, like, and you know, the directions are wrong and blah blah blah, they can find the link to click to go to the Zoom meeting. But I mean, I don't know, I guess
well, and it's also about not causing harm too, right? Because like we get clean to be productive members of society, we get clean to be, you know, good to our families and our friends, right? And if we are saying to the newcomer, look, we're going to be selfish, we're going to meet in person, even though we know it's dangerous to our families, it's dangerous to our community, it's dangerous to society as a whole, we still want to do this, so we're going to do it anyway. Like, to me, that absolutely affects NA as a whole and shows the newcomer that this program is not anything what we're telling you it is. You know, we're still selfish, self-centered people.
Yeah.
Like that. And I think that causes more damage than telling a newcomer, like, look, I know this is a pain in the ass, but you're going to have to do this online, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's kind of like keeping your own side of the street clean, right? You know, like, you know, if you're going out to these places and potentially spreading a virus, that's not keeping your side of the street clean. that's being selfish. We'll just have talking points. This will kind of just be like a round robin, and I think what's important to remember.
Raising my hand.
I can't fucking see you, David.
I'm sorry. You know, I do that in studio. Like,
I know you do that.
Literally, when I'm in studio and I have something to say, I will raise my hand. Like he's a test proctor or something. All right. So this is for all of us. So how do you deal with personalities inside your home group? Like you talked about that, Jexy, with a lot of that negative feedback. How did you process that and then deal with it and come out positively?
Well, I'll tell you this. I've been in a lot of different home groups before. And what I found is that my home group right now, I do a lot of work for the area where it's just where I usually see the whole personality stuff, right? But my home group is not a group that has the way our group functions is if one person's like, I have this really great idea, the rest of the group generally supports them. Right. If it sounds like it's going to be good for the group as a whole, like we don't have members that pick fights just because they can. Like we don't have people who are always at odds with each other. Right. It's one of the reasons I picked this particular home group. Like we have some members that I respect who seem to make sense. And, you know, if I say something that I think makes sense, like they'll go along with it. You know, like we all support each other in such a positive way. That this particular home group doesn't have that. But when it comes to negativity in general with a group, you know, in it, cause I see it a lot in areas, you know, area level and stuff, is what I've had to do is it's really, and it's not easy cause I didn't do this right away, but it's like, turn it over, right? Like accept the fact that like, I don't have to be right. I'd rather be happy. You know, and like I can try to convince people all day long that what they're doing is not a good idea. Like when I got wind that a lot of these Zoom meetings are being recorded, like I tried to explain to my area that like it was a danger and that maybe, you know, they would want to consider coming on the Discord platform because at the time it was safer. But people, for some reason, thought I had some, you know, I was getting some sort of personal gain from this Discord. And so there was these rumors going around that, like, I was in it for myself, right? You can't combat that. So I just said, you know what?
No.
It's fine. I'm not, you do what you want to do. You know, I don't care. It's not my business, right? Like, my home group has made the decisions we did, and I have that, you know? And if other groups want to do, I mean, now it's different now that they password protected some of these meetings and made things a little bit more difficult. They're definitely much safer now. But, yeah. You know, I'm not going to convince you. I'm not going to convince, the more I try to convince you that I'm not getting something out of this, the more you're going to think I'm getting something out of it. So, like, what's the point? Yeah. You know, like, I'm just going to do myself harm by trying to argue something like that. So it's, I just make sure that I'm always in a home group. I'm part of a home group where I feel, you know, the warm, welcoming feeling in discussions. If I don't feel that and we're fighting all the time, that is not the group for me.
Yep. How about you, Eric? How do you deal with the personalities in home groups? Or the personalities in recovery in general?
I mean, I haven't been in a home group in a while, but what my sponsor would say is that I can be a little bit manipulative in home groups. So
you can?
I can. I was doing it in our home group, by the way, if you didn't realize it. And I didn't mean to do it. It just kind of happened where I started suggesting things, and then, like, they started getting voted in. So I guess with personalities in home groups, I mean, I pretty much had cool home groups. The noon meeting had some really hard personalities, actually, back in the day. So, I don't know. I mean, I know what you're going to talk about, David, because you had a little moment that I wasn't there for.
I did have a moment.
You had a little moment.
I did have a moment.
I think at the end of the day, I just have to remember that the meeting is not really for me. It's for other people. Mm-hmm. And if I don't like the meeting, I can always go to another meeting and find a new home group.
Yep.
And that I should not rock the boat within the meeting. And I'm not saying rock the boat in, like, causing gossip. I'm just saying I change meetings. And I know that.
Yes, you do.
I will change the entire format of a meeting. Yeah. But, I mean, that goes back to autonomy and being able to kind of do whatever the fuck you want to do with the fourth tradition, as long as it's not, you know, detrimental. You can make it a meditation pamphlet 12 concept meeting if you want to, you know. We can talk about the concepts, but I don't know. I mean, I think it's, you know, I guess when I was first, probably like, 8 years ago now, I had a home group, which was at noon. It was a Wednesday, Friday, noon meeting home group. And there were some strong, it was a city meeting, strong personalities. And, you know, I was still early in recovery. And there were two people that, you know, it was just like, it wasn't going to change. Even Jess is a strong fucking personality. And I had to be like, you know, cause I was in two home groups with her. I was in the noon. And then I was also in, the Friday night meditation. And, you know, it's sometimes hard cause I don't want to necessarily, demean
Eric's group.
Yes, it's not my group. I don't want to demean people. I don't want to put them down. I don't want to assert my will. And that is one of the reasons I don't have a home group, actually.
That's interesting.
My take on this, it's not so much dealing for, and this is for me, this is my opinion, my story. It's not so much dealing with personalities as much as it is allowing things to not go your way. Like, when there's a specific topic that comes to a group conscious and it goes to a vote and you vote one way and it goes the other, I have to be okay with that. Now, does it suck? Do I think it's wrong sometimes? Yes. Am I a very strongly opinionated person? Eric would say yes.
You brought a revote when one of your votes was shot down when I was there for the next group conscience and it passed.
Well, I needed numbers. It was wrong, and I needed numbers to get shit done. So I called in some more representatives to the House floor and got my bill passed. But that's not the way it should be.
Yeah,
it was very sneaky. It was very manipulative. It was very wrong. But most of the time, it's just like Jaxie said, it's about acceptance and being like, okay, that didn't go the way I wanted it to. I adhere to the group's practices, but honestly, I don't have to be happy about it. Like, you don't necessarily have to be happy about everything that's going on in your group, but as long as it's not hurting anyone, it's not hurting the group, just because it's not my way, it is what it is, and I just have to live with it.
Yeah,
it is hard, though. I have to say, like, I'm one of those people that thinks that if I'm bringing up an idea, like, it's the best idea, right? Like, if I'm telling you I think things should go a certain way, it's because I really believe that's the best for the group, you know? But the fact is that not everybody's going to agree with me, and I hate it.
Yep.
But, you know, that's why I feel like I like my home group because it's laid back. We're a very newcomer heavy group. We have a lot of newcomers that come in, and our home group's policy has always been, you know, like if they want to do service, like they get the service positions and we support them.
Awesome.
You know, like if they, anything that we can do to make NA attractive, that's what our group does. So like we've had newcomers who have 30 days clean who are like, how much time do I have to chair? And we're like, you want a chair? You can do it today. And also next year, if you need help, I'll help you along. You know, and we make them feel included and wanted. And you know what? When you see the look on someone's face when they finally feel included in a group, you know, versus them the first time that they sit in a business meeting and they hear all the hungry members arguing and yelling and being mean to each other, it's not attraction,
it's
right?
Not attractive. Yep.
So it's like, you know, I think I try to keep that in mind, you know, like how do we make it be, what's more important, me getting my way or me continuing to help make NA attractive for the newcomer? So that helps a little when I don't get my way.
Yes. Eric, may I bring up another talking point?
Go ahead, David.
Okay. So this is a scenario that is, I believe, still currently happening in our area that technically it is autonomy, but I also do believe it does hurt our area as a whole. So there is a specific area or a specific meeting in our area that sells all their literature for a flat $5.
Oh, I love that.
Most other groups in the area, if not all that I've been to, sell the books at face value. So we're not losing money on literature. And we're being able to restock just for what we paid for it. Now, this group, they outsell everybody in literature because they're undercutting the price of literature in the area. And I believe it hurts the other groups in the area by undercutting them. You are underselling everybody and not giving every other group in the area a fair shake at developing literature revenue, because everybody's just like, oh, just go to the Saturday meeting. They'll give it to you for $5 instead of $10. And it's like, whoa, that's hurting our group because I understand where they're coming from. Newcomers, it's easier for them to get $5 and $10, whatever. And it's more important, and any group in our area will give away the literature if that's the case. If you don't have money, you take the literature. We'll figure it out. But I don't think it's right that they should be able to undercut it like that. So do you believe areas agreeing upon book pricing is a topic and a direct maybe violation of step four?
So it's funny that you talked about that, because that's actually a point of view I never considered. My old home group in Southern Maryland, we weren't allowed to pay rent for where our meeting was held. It was a community center, and they didn't take money from anybody. Mm-hmm. Nobody could pay rent there. So we ended up, and we had a lot of people at that meeting. I mean, at least in relation to what our expenses were. And so we always had a lot of extra money. So what we did is we used to buy extra copies of the basic text and give them away for free to newcomers. We didn't ask them for money. And we didn't do it with all the books, just the basic text. Yeah. But like and it was known that our group would give you the book for free. And we did it because we couldn't pay rent. So we wanted to be able to contribute in another way, you know? And so of course we gave literature to the building and stuff, but you know, technically I can see how other groups may have been like, well, wait a second, if you're giving them away, you know, like I never considered how that would affect other groups. It's actually a good point. It makes me look at that in a different way.
Yeah. What's your take on it, Eric?
I know what meeting you're talking about.
I know you do.
I mean, I'm honestly fine with it. It's their choice to sell the book at whatever cost they want to sell the book at. I don't really think.
But do you believe it hurts?
No.
Do you believe it hurts other meetings in the area?
No, because I mean, literature sales shouldn't really be what's keeping a meeting alive. I mean, if literature sale is what's keeping a meeting alive, I mean, I don't think it really matters if we sell a book at all. I think all that really matters is if people come to meetings.
Yes, exactly. And that's the overall principle for sure.
I mean, to be real, I mean, that's kind of cool. Like I'll buy, if, you know, let's say a newcomer was to come up to me at that Saturday meeting and was like, hey, I need a basic text. And, you know, I would buy it at price too, but you know, it's like, oh wow, it's like $15. Here's $15. Go buy it. You know, like, get the step working guide, get the, like, the green and gold, and get the basic text. And
technically, isn't it the group that would be losing the money anyway? Because they're still paying for those books at cost, right?
Yeah. They're
still
paying.
So making the decision to sell it less is technically coming from the group's money. So if anybody's losing out on anything, it would be the group, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're just making the literature more accessible to, you know, the newcomer. And I don't really think that's wrong, right? I mean, like, you know, when you come people aren't always able to afford. I don't know. When you're okay, so think back when you were a newcomer. What would you rather have? Would you rather have a pack of cigarettes, or would you rather have a book?
Pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, I mean, right? So, and not everyone's going to go to that meeting. Not everyone's going to get their book there. So I'm
just saying it's something to think about. I'm just asking questions. But.
It is something to think about.
No, I think that is something to think about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying I'm good with it, though. That's where I stand.
Yes. Overall, and like anybody who's listening, I'm not preaching price gouging newcomers or anybody who's seeking literature. Like I've bought many pieces of literature for many people when they've come up short, and that's not a problem, and it's a blessing to do so. But like you got to keep that in mind. Like, is this hurting other groups by like what we're doing, what our practices are doing? So it's just something to think about.
I mean,
but obviously, it is most important that anybody has the literature, then the group has the money.
I don't think the literature is hurting the group. That's all I'm going to say.
No, because I think if anything, it's the area, like it's Worlds that ends up making money from the literature.
Yeah,
because they're the ones that mark it up.
Like
we're not getting into
that. David, the reason the 8:30 meeting isn't doing well is because the 7:00 meeting's better. Like, and that's like the hard truth, you know. Like, the 7:00 meeting's a better meeting than the 8:30.
What?
Like on Saturday.
What meeting? What?
Yeah, exactly. You don't even know about it.
Yes.
So yeah, that's why.
You know what else I think when it comes to the fourth tradition about groups affecting NA as a whole too, is personalities in the groups, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can't tell you how often I've seen people go to their very first NA meeting, not get hugged, not be, you know, not feel welcome, or have it be like a bunch of older men and their young woman or whatever, and have that feeling of not being welcome or not fitting in impact their ability to want to try another meeting, you know? And I think that also affects groups as a whole. Like if you walk into a meeting for the first time and you don't get a hug and you're not welcomed, you may never come back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that that's something some groups don't think about either, is that, like, you know, their way of doing things at a meeting can affect other meetings by simply, you know, being a turnoff.
Yeah.
So, do you have any?
What do you got, Eric?
I have a question from the Guiding Principles book, which I highly recommend.
Okay.
One of the...
Don't rub it in.
It's a cool book. We were doing the first tradition, my sponsor and I, like a while ago.
No, I know, but you have it, and Jexy and I don't, so you're throwing shade, and I don't appreciate it.
Lowish shade. So, one of the spiritual principles...
I got your back, Jexy.
Thank you.
...is creativity, right? Because it allows us, and, you know, it allows us to be creative in the way that we... you know, go about, you know, having a meeting. And, you know, one of the questions for a workshop question is, what is the importance of creative freedom in a Narcotics Anonymous group?
That's an interesting question. Well,
Go ahead.
I've been to meetings in a whole lot of different places. Right, like I'm up and down the East Coast, multiple states, D.C., you know, Maine, New Jersey, you know, all these places. And one thing I've noticed is that all meetings are different. They all have different formats. Mm-hmm. They all have different ways of doing things, right? But the core principles are the same. And I think that that's what is important. Like, are we representing NA as a whole? You know, like the formats can be different and the topics can be different. But I think the message needs to be the same. And I think as long as the overall NA message is the same, and you're not going to have a problem, you know, then you can be as creative as you want with the meeting. But it needs to still be an NA message.
Yeah. Will you read the question one more time, Eric?
What is the importance of creative freedom in Narcotics Anonymous groups? And then I'll answer after you.
The importance of creative freedom. I think Jexy like really hit it off there. I think the importance of creative freedom in NA is that all meetings are different. That's a beautiful thing. If all meetings were exactly the same, it would get boring as shit. Like how would you switch things up and keep things fresh and new? Like here in our area, you can go a couple miles down the road and get a meeting that's entirely different. It's not necessarily a speaker driven meeting. It's a topic driven meeting, or it's a round robin, or it's a meditation by candlelight, or it's a black light meeting at midnight on a Friday or Saturday night. Like, all those different little nuances to a meeting, give it some personality. And I think a meeting should have personality. I've been to some really stale meetings where just like Jexy said, like it kind of feels like everybody there is going through the motions. And I'm like, ugh. There's no passion here. There's no actual fire or drive for recovery here, per se. I mean, and that's just my personal experience. But yeah, I like the little quirks. I like that some of them only serve tea instead of coffee. Some of them have cookies and hot chocolate. Others have speaker meetings, or they sit in a circle, or all different shit. And it gives you a fresh take and an opportunity to see different ways to recover within the same program. And just like Jaxie said, adhering and projecting the same message.
And I think it's like it also shows that, like, look, NA is just as unique as its people, right? Like, we're not, it's unity, not uniformity. You know, we hear that all the time. And I think that having all these meetings be slightly different and doing their own thing while still giving the same message is giving an example to the newcomer of what that means. You know, there's so much that we can do within the NA program that's different. Yeah. You know, but yet we're always going to get the same principles, you know, we're always going to get a message of hope, you know?
Yeah. And if all flowers were roses, nobody would think they were all that nice.
Yeah.
Just saying. That's the truth. What about you, Eric? What's your take on that?
So, you know, you mentioned the meditation meeting that we have around here, and I was the catalyst for that meeting. And I took,
oh God, here we go.
I took a lot of liberty, with, the creation. 'Cause you mentioned the tea thing. And I remember, one of the things I brought up to the home group when we were having that discussion is the meeting was at 9 o'clock at night. And, you know, I was like, is it really beneficial to serve caffeine at this meeting where our main goal is to meditate? And, you know, that was actually a pretty controversial thing at that time. But, you know, those like small creative things that you wouldn't think about, where it's like, this doesn't really help us reach our primary goal of this particular meeting. And I mean, I got real weird with suggestions on that, because I know at one point in time it was like, all right, we're going to meditate for 15 minutes. We're going to read a pamphlet. You know, every second and fourth Friday of the month, and then let's do Living Clean on the third, and then we'll do, you know, let's do. Like,
it was a weird fucking meeting.
It was weird. It got weird, and eventually a lot of that stuff got like removed. But you know, you can kind of like mess around with it. I mean, some of my favorite meetings, you know, basic tech study meetings, I don't really see that many. I was in a home group for one, but like an actual basic tech study, not a step in tradition meeting, the whole fucking book, besides stories, the whole, you know. But like, that's like a cool creative way to like have a meeting, you know, something you don't see very often. Topic meetings are really cool. You know, like the 8:30 on Thursdays in Pikesville. Fucking cool meeting. It's cool that they pick, you know, topics out of a hat. That's not something around here that we usually see. I know it does exist, but you just don't see it. So I like when people do things a little bit different. Like a step working guide meeting. That's a cool meeting.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we had one around here for a while. I don't know if it's still around, but, you know, it was here. And, you know, There's a lot of different ways we can go about this, and it doesn't have to be open or speaker in order for it to be a meeting. Like get creative, get, you know, do something different. You know, because eventually, like you kind of were saying, like it'll just be going through the motions. You know, like, oh, we're gonna set up the chairs and turn on the coffee pot, and like, all right, oh well, Steve's sharing, cool. You know, I heard Steve share, you know, the meeting on Tuesday, like a few weeks ago. Like, oh yeah, fuck, I've heard Steve like five times in the past 2 months. So, you know, it's nice to be creative, because then, you know, you get something different. It's not the same thing, because when you've been around for however long, you know, we've all been around, you hear the same story a lot of fucking times. And it's nice when you get to do something different, sure. Right?
Yep. All right. I have a very interesting topic I'll just go into it. So, I think all of us are aware of quote-unquote rogue meetings.
Baby blues.
And there's yes. But there's quite a few in our area. There's just for round numbers sake, there's 25 meetings in our area. Just for, I don't know the exact number, but just for round numbers, we'll say that. There's 25 meetings.
So they hand out free baby blues, David. How do you feel about that? Do you feel okay about that? Third editions?
We're getting
go
there.
Ahead.
We're
go
getting
ahead.
There, Eric. Okay. So for round numbers, we have 25 meetings in our area. Now, at area service every month, only 15 ever show up.
So
there's
10
meetings operating pretty much completely autonomously outside of the structure of NA. They don't, the money doesn't go up to area. It doesn't filter up. And there's even furthermore rogue meetings, like Eric was talking about, that give out baby blues that still go off, quote unquote, NA purist tradition and literature, and are sort of, you could look at it in a way they're muddying the waters of Narcotics Anonymous recovery. So is there, how does that hurt the structure of Narcotics Anonymous working like in conjunction of the area and the region and world with these other NA groups that aren't really accountable to anybody except themselves?
So my thoughts on that are this.
And how do we deal with that?
I think that if a group is meeting and maybe they don't have, they're not bringing in enough money where it would be donated anyway, they don't have a service, they don't have someone to be a GSR, whatever, but they're still functioning as a normal NA group that follows the traditions, that's doing, carrying the message, then I don't necessarily see a problem with that, right? Yeah. I think, though, that the groups that call themselves NA but do not follow our traditions, that are real rogue meetings, are the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that. I actually was the PR chair for my old area and had to deal with a group that, and the person who started the group, his mother was somebody important in the church. And the church wanted to have all sorts of recovery meetings meet at their church so they can make it easier for their congregants to go, which in theory is a great idea. But the church didn't like the idea of a higher power being anything. And the church wanted the group to specifically state that a higher power was Jesus Christ. And also wanted to be part of the business meetings. And they wanted to have a say. And so, obviously, that's a massive problem. And so we had talked to this group, and I had gone to the group, and I had, there was a whole lot of issues, but I eventually got them on board. I had talked to the church, and for a little while, things were fine. But, as it is with all things, as soon as we stopped checking up on them, the church stepped back in. And so we had to take the group out of the meeting list and not announce it as an NA meeting. And we let people know when they mentioned going to that meeting, that is a meeting run by the church, by the church, and no matter what they call themselves, they are not part of NA. Because it's dangerous, but so I think it depends. Like, if the group's intention is to do the right thing, but they just don't have the money, the resources, or the service, commit, like enough people to commit, then it's fine.
What if they do have the resources and the people and everything like that, but it's just sort of apathy or a disregard for the higher structure of NA, and they just ignore it?
I think it's disappointing, but I don't know that it necessarily is an awful thing. I think it's disappointing because then their members miss out on the opportunity to vote on things that matter.
Yeah.
They miss out on the opportunity to, how are they getting medallions? How are they getting literature? Are they ordering it from World directly? Or are they just not having it? you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of that stuff matters. But, you know, it depends, because there's a lot of groups in, like, places where there is no real area structure that function kind of as a rogue meeting, but they're doing the best they can.
Yep. Agreed. What's your thought, Eric? I know you're gonna go down this rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So, first off, with, I guess, all right, so we live in Baltimore, and there's a shit ton of fucking meetings in the, in the book. I mean, there's a lot. It's a fucking book. It's not a pamphlet of meetings.
Yes.
It's a fucking book of meetings. I mean, yes. Our book of meetings rivals probably, for size-wise, the little
anywhere.
White book, right? Like, I mean, just from, like, pure size.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember when I went to Chicago, when I lived in Chicago, there were more meetings in our area of Baltimore than there were in Chicago.
Yeah.
And that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, Chicago is three times the size of Baltimore. Easy.
Yeah, but like nonetheless, if you think about it, one of the things that, like, okay, so not even thinking about myself, but thinking about the newcomer, right? Because there were a lot of times this happened to me when I was a newcomer. There are a lot of meetings, so there's a lot of options. Not all those doors are open. And there needs to be some sort of way of understanding what meetings... I mean, there really needs to be an audit. There needs to be a regular audit of what meetings...
Offensive.
Yeah, I mean, because if you don't know... We don't want to send people. Everyone's always talking about the newcomer, but if you really want to like talk about the newcomer, like, you know, figure out what meetings are still alive, because a lot of those
meetings
aren't.
Do the meetings in your area, when you're talking about like 10 groups that never ever show up to area, are they still included in your area's meeting list?
Well, we're like, our meeting list is an entire region, so we don't do it like just by it's Baltimore. But it's also, well, just Baltimore is what, four areas, right?
Yeah. The Free State region. No, I think it's five.
Well, that's when you include some of the other counties. I'm just talking about Baltimore in general. You have the city, you have Northeast, you have Northwest, and then you have West Side. And then you can go into all the, Bay Area and stuff like, well, I guess Bay Area is also Baltimore.
Bay Area and Central are free state as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we're like, I guess when you're looking, so in our area would be West Side, and our area, there's 10 meetings that aren't coming. You know, we don't know if there are still, like, unless someone's gone to them. I know there was one that's been shut down. And then the other thing, which is always interesting when you're talking about this, is that you can choose what area your area is. So, you know, someone who is in fucking, I don't know, DC could technically come up to us and be like, oh, hey, I'm going to be part of your area. It's like, well, I mean, that's, I guess that's okay. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but.
See, I think it makes sense if they cut, like, I know in my area, if a group doesn't come to area service for 2 months in a row, they lose their voting rights.
That's a good idea.
And I think if they're not there for 6 months, it is the area chair actually goes to the meeting and checks, maybe even if less than that, maybe if it's once they haven't been there for 2 months or something, they actually send somebody to go check the meeting to make sure it's still functioning, it's still active, and then they see. And if it's not, they'll be removed from the meeting list. If they are, then they find out why they haven't been there and see if they could help.
See, and I think that's something that needs to, and I brought this up. I remember when I was more active in NA, I did bring that up, that I think there needs to be a West Side area, and it's been brought up before. I know I'm not the only one who said this, but a West Side area meeting list, because then it is much more manageable to actually update what meetings exist. You know, it's what, I mean, I guess it's like 25 to 50 meetings. Rather than, you know, 500 meetings.
Yes. All right. Do we have a Twitter, Eric?
Yeah, we always have a Twitter. Just give me a second to find it, and you know,
Is it that time?
It can be that time.
I think it's that time.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it is that time. It is that time, ladies and gentlemen, the moment you've all been waiting for, to the Twitter!
Woo! Good job, David. Yeah, good job.
That's how good. I really sold
it that time. I was pretty happy about it. It's my Price is Right moment. I like it.
I guess.
Sounded great.
All right, I'm going to do this one. This one's probably going to be controversial, too.
Ooh, love it. Love it.
So this is from our friend Freddie, David.
Awesome.
From Instagram, The Message, LLC. And his question, which I like, and I will definitely be controversial, probably. So I apologize to anyone who doesn't like what I have to say. Are treatment centers evolving with the times? Why do treatment centers and the rooms of recovery seem to be on such different pages when it comes to recovery?
Ooh.
I think this goes back to stuff we've talked about before. The last time I was on.
All right, Jaxie, you start it off and then I'll go and then Eric.
Okay, so I think the reason is that treatment centers, by virtue of design, are not only going to keep up with the latest science, the latest medical, you know, all the stuff that they're finding out about addiction. And NA is a program of complete abstinence based on spiritual principles, so there's nothing to evolve with that, right? The only thing I think that we need to evolve on is understanding that these other areas are growing and evolving, and that if we need to continue to make things be attractive. And if our position is, if you take medications, if you do anything else, you're not welcome, well, then we're no longer attractive and no longer carrying the message. So yeah. I don't think we necessarily have to evolve. I think as people, look, it's, NA has changed over time anyway. You listen to a lot of old timers, they talk about when people would come in, they'd be like, sit down, shut up, don't, you know, we don't want to hear from you. Whereas today, that's not so much the case in most meetings. A lot more newcomers share.
Yes.
You know, we hear the pain. We're more open to that now. So I think that over time, our program's going to evolve to not be so judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
You know, treatment centers are supposed to be able to keep up with what's they know is working, right? They're based on evidence, on scientific and medical evidence of what works. If they didn't do that, they wouldn't be successful.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All right. I don't think the recovery community, I don't think the anonymous programs, Smart Recovery, Celebrate Recovery, Refuge Recovery, I don't think those necessarily have to evolve as much. But I do believe that the rehabs and inpatients and outpatient programs do need an evolutionary process, because what I've seen from inpatient rehabs in our area is they strictly send people to either AA or NA. And that isn't, just frankly, it's not going to work. Those programs aren't going to work for everybody. So I think the rehabs need to start bringing the Celebrate and the Smart Recovery and the Refuge Recovery. I think they need to bring that into the fold and make that a more viable option for people in early recovery. Because if you're only given the choice between apples and oranges recovery, and you don't like either of those because maybe you're a very strict Christian, maybe a Celebrate Recovery could work a lot better for you. If you're a strict Buddhist, Refuge Recovery could work a lot better for you. Or if you're an agnostic, scientific-based mind, a Smart Recovery could work a lot better. And also, I think the overall model of rehab needs to change and evolve as well, because it's not, I wish it was just based off medical science, but it's not. It's also based off insurance companies.
Well, that's true.
Insurance companies were the ones that developed the 28-day model. That is not a clinical model of recovery. It isn't. The 28-day is because what are we really willing to pay for people to go to rehab? We're willing to pay 1 month, and that's it. And for a lot of people, that 28-day model is not comprehensive enough. It just
most
isn't.
Of the rehabs and by us are 6 to 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're and way more long-term.
So medical and clinical recovery has actually surpassed the insurance program, which is the money side of it, which really sucks that rehabs and the whole cycle of rehab farms that were down in Florida and are still popping up around the country, where they're literally taking advantage of the addict, of the system, and abusing people and abusing the system for their own personal gain. So yes, I think there does need to be a comprehensive structure change for rehabs and insurance companies to better acclimate the people out of really the depths of addiction and working them back into a new life, instead of saying you got 28 days, you're on the clock, boom, let's go start recovering, because it's not going to happen for everybody in 28 days. It's just
it's not going
to happen for a lot of people. So I don't think the recovery meetings need to change, but I think the inpatients and the outpatients need to change. I think they need to change their thinking on the broader spectrum of what is viable recovery with those other three kind of up and coming fellowships, and the model of how they're treating people. What about you, Eric?
I agree.
I mean, I don't know. I do think the rooms need to change personally. I've said this for a long time. I think one thing I disagree with, I don't believe it's always about the newcomer. And I've been saying this for a long time. I believe that everyone is important, and we lose sight of that a lot when it's just about the newcomer. Because sometimes there's a big gap in where you are when you first come in to where you are later on. There's a very large gap, and it is a very different set of problems and circumstances that need to be dealt with. And when we're just worried about what happened within the first 90 days of our recovery, that's a problem. And I think that mindset needs to change, and people need to evolve beyond that. And that's just something that I feel, and I know it won't probably happen, but I also, one thing that I've talked to you about this, David, and it's part of the reason we started the podcast, is because I was talking about this years and years ago before we ever did this. Or when I came back from Chicago, before I even went to Chicago, I was talking about this, where I want an inclusive program. I want something where someone from NA, someone from AA, someone from CA, someone from different programs, someone who's not even in a program, can sit down and have a conversation about recovery without being like, you know, I don't, you know, my program says this. Because who cares? Who cares? Yeah. You know what? I just want to know how you're doing it, and maybe that will help me, and the way that I'm doing it might help you. Like, I really just don't care about, like, you know, whose dogma is correct. I just want to know how to get better. And I believe an inclusive program, which brings everyone together instead of separating us. Because, I mean, that's really all we're doing at this point, is we're just segregating ourselves based on, like, how we identify.
I think it's interesting you brought that up. Because there's a lot of, I've been getting a lot of messages from these online meetings that are just recovery-based online meetings.
Yeah.
And they're not any particular program. And they're thriving right now. You know, people from all programs showing up and just, you know, talking about recovery. I think you're right. Like, look, no program is going to work if you're not open-minded, right? Like, that's one of the principles of NA, is we need to be open-minded. And like sometimes something from somebody else, you know, what somebody else says is going to work. Look, it's always going to be better to understand addiction. So understanding the science and you know, the medical studies about addiction, it's just going to help you in your recovery. It's not a danger.
Yes.
You know, and I think promoting education in recovery is always going to be better.
Yes. Yep. Absolutely. I think we all hit the nail on the head in three completely different ways, and I applaud. I'm going to snap up all three of our answers. Little snaps for everybody. Good job.
All right. Well.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Jexy, for anybody out there who's listening, where can they find you?
So you can find me by on YouTube. I have a YouTube channel called According to Jexy. I also have a Twitter and an Instagram of the same name, but YouTube is my thing. Also, every Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a live trivia game. This week, YouTube actually shut me down. Apparently, their AI system's going rogue with nobody working. So it thought I violated community guidelines, but I didn't. But anyway, so but my video uploads are still working. I also have my own Discord community that you can find by going to the description of any of my YouTube videos. We have a really great community there. Everybody in recovery doesn't do the same thing, you know, and we talk very openly about, you know, recovery and how we're doing and what's working and what's not and, you know, what's going on. So, yeah, check me out. I'd love to see you guys.
Absolutely. Everybody go check out According to Jexy. And here at Podcast Recovery, Eric and I would love to thank Jexy, our lovely guest, for coming on for a third time with us.
Yeah. Come back anytime you want me.
Absolutely. We love having you, Jexy. You're so well spoken, so well thought. Everything's positive. We love you.
Love you guys
the
too.
Connectivity
thank you.
We have.
For sure.
All right. Here at Podcast Recovery, we are aiming to expand the scope of support for recovering addicts. Accessibility and convenience of helpful services is paramount to combating addiction. We work to bring the message of recovery to every addict, wherever and whenever it is needed. We believe that a powerful voice of recovery should be obtainable, practical, and at the touch of a button. Every addict deserves to hear a message of hope, and Podcast Recovery is here to provide it. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you check out According to Jexy on YouTube. Check us out, our YouTube channel on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Like, share, subscribe, podcastrecovery.com for all your information needs. But most importantly, everybody out there, stay safe and stay clean.